Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Without intervention, the COVID-19-induced economic crisis is in danger of becoming a historic housing crisis. By September, more than 20 million renters will be at risk of eviction, especially as eviction moratoriums come to an end. Without income, renters can't pay rent and utilities. Without monthly payments, landlords and other companies can't make mortgages or bond payments. What's being done locally to head this off? At the beginning of July, the city of San Antonio opened a new financial and housing recovery center to provide a myriad of assistance programs and services for residents affected by COVID-19. The primary goal of this program is to help residents affected by the economic downturn achieve financial and housing stability. But how does this program work? What help is available? And how do we get this help into the hands of families and small businesses who really need it? You can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're joined this hour by Veronica Vero Soto, the director of the City of San Antonio Neighborhood and Housing Services Department. And Vero Soto, welcome back to The Source.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Also with us is Melody Woolsey, the director of the city's Department of Human Services. And Melody Woolsey, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
And also joining us is Alejandra Alex Lopez, director of the city's Economic Development Department. And Alejandra Lopez, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
So, Vero Soto, if you could tell us about what things look like right now, what is your assessment of the level of stability, instability that many families here in San Antonio are looking at?
Well, I can tell you that since April, we have been running our emergency housing assistance program that does help families that have rent or mortgage payments where they're behind get caught up. And we have had a very stream of applications coming in. One of the things we have noticed since the eviction courts started meeting is that we have seen a slight uptick in the number of applications coming in. Part of it could be that we are actually having a team with both city and county staff at the courts, and the courts themselves are sending out information about our program and the recovery center with notices for hearings. And so I think that is helping people be more aware of our program that can help them. But we have continued to get about 100 applications per day for the Emergency Housing Assistance Program. And we continue to get a lot of calls.
So what is the state of that fund?
Last week, we launched a dashboard where the community can get real live information on where we are at with payments and commitments. We started with $25 million or so back in April. We are going through that money. We'll go through that first tranche this month. And we have, as of June, an additional $25.6 that we're starting to utilize. So it's a dollar program, but we have paid out almost $23 million, and we have about $27 million in commitments. That's the people in the system where we're reviewing their applications right now.
And so you have, what, $50 million left?
We have about $24 million left.
$24 million left. How long will that last you?
So the program, along with the recovery center, is supposed to last us through December. It really will depend on the number of applications that we see, however. So if we continue to see more people applying now, it could last us less. Our estimate is that sometime in November is when we will have no more money for this program.
That's right, when we're going to see a lot of things could really get bad at that time already, we're expecting.
Well, this crisis has really put a strain on a lot of our friends and neighbors. And so we do expect to see some more eviction filings now that that moratorium has been lifted. And part of the whole recovery center idea is that there are things we can do to help get families to be more financially stable, make sure that the housing security issues are addressed. And if there are small businesses, you know, make sure that those businesses can continue to have staff that will help us avoid a deeper crisis, if you will. But things haven't been very good for many of our community. And so all the investment and interventions we're trying to do are to help mitigate all of that.
Melody Wolseley, with the director of the City of City of San Antonio's Department of Human Services, and you're helping people navigate these benefits. How is that working?
Sure. So, you know, we've been doing financial counseling for quite a while, several years, and we're building on that concept to really add in a rich benefits assessment and navigation program. Because we want to ensure that people who are, you know, may also be seeking housing assistance or maybe their ability to get the housing assistance has run out, we want to make sure that they're accessing all public benefits for which they might be eligible. So that could include supplemental food assistance, food stamps, Medicaid or Medicare, you know, disability funds. The earned income tax credit during tax season, and then there's many new benefits through CARES Act, the federal funding for COVID 19 relief, and we just want to make sure that the families who are coming in are receiving those services and also financial counseling if they need it to help them if they've ended up with additional debt or just need some assistance in how they budget.
Also, there are a lot of predatory people out there who would take advantage of people in this vulnerable, desperate state, and it could worsen their financial situation.
That's absolutely right. Part of financial counseling is asset protection, and so helping people avoid those kind of fraudulent situations, and it's something we're especially concerned about with our seniors, is the level of fraud and abuse that's happening.
Well, that could be actually right now, pretty much anyone who's trying to keep their head above water. There seems to be, any time like this, there's a growth in the number of scams, people who are promising to help you consolidate or absolve your debt, and then it takes a fee and then nothing happens.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's a very good point.
And so part of what you're doing with financial counseling is helping people recognize that there are predators out there.
Yes. Yep. And also recognize that, you know, sometimes interest rates are high. Understand the things that will really strip you of your financial assets or well-being, like payday lenders and, you know, those kind of services that people who don't have anywhere else to turn often take advantage of, and they end up not being able to pay them off for years.
So when we come back from the break, we'll find out where people can turn. They don't have to go to these high interest rate type storefronts. And there is benefits here locally. Also, we're going to talk about what's available for small businesses and nonprofits. If you have a question or a comment, call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the City of San Antonio's Financial and Housing Recovery Center. This is the local effort to try to help people stay in their homes as we're looking at the COVID-19 related economic crisis and how we are in danger of seeing a historic housing crisis as people will be evicted. But also, not just families, but also small businesses and nonprofits. markets. Alejandra Alex Lopez joins us. She's the director of the city's Economic Development Department. Can you talk about what's available for small businesses?
Certainly. So we're excited to be partnering with Lyft Fund to offer over $24 million that were made available through the recovery plan that was approved by City Council in early June. These grants will be specifically for businesses that we've read and we've seen how they have not necessarily been able to access some of the programs that have been available at the federal level. So we're really focusing on these micro businesses, these businesses in our neighborhoods that have 20 or less employees. And we are going to be offering these grants that will range from $10,000 up to $75,000 to really help them stabilize through this situation and, most importantly, to help develop that plan for how they can recover from the situation.
So the thinking is that we have people who have invested their entire lives into building small businesses, and now we've run into this brick wall with COVID-19. And what the hope is that we will be able to, once we get a vaccine and we're able to deal with COVID and people go back to normal, that we can try to snap back. But help people just kind of keep the businesses on some sort of life support until we get to that point, so we don't lose all of that all of that equity and all of that hard work. Is that the thinking?
Absolutely, and that is very much the intent. This is a bridge to help in this immediate situation that has been ongoing for several months now. But you know, it's still important to understand that there can be some plans for how these businesses that are so important to our communities and are really part of our cultural fabric, how we can make sure that we maintain as many of them as we can.
I'm going to go to a caller. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Dion is on the line. And Dion, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, my name is Dion. And I was calling because I was listening in on the call. And I was calling regarding the assistance with mortgage payments and rent. It's been kind of tough. Really, I've been really challenged with all that's going on. I have also some health issues, and with the fear and the worry of COVID-19, and being challenged with meeting the payment for the rent, it flares up the health issue. So I was really calling to find out, how do I go about seeking the assistance, the information to do an application for the rent, helping out with the rent.
All right, Dion, thank you so much for calling in. And let's get that actionable information out there so people who need this can try and get access to it. So Vero Soto, the director of the City of San Antonio Neighborhood and Housing Services Department, what do you have for Dion?
So Dion, I'm going to give you a phone number where you can call in and get information. We do have the application online. So I'll give you both ways in which to get help. Our phone number is 1-0-207-5910. That's our call center, and they will be able to direct you to the online application, walk you through. There's a small video on how to apply, because we do have some documents that people have to submit. The application itself is online, and for the whole Financial and Housing Recovery Center, we did launch a special webpage. And that webpage, all our programs tab in that webpage, it's listed for the Emergency Housing Assistance Program. But the overall webpage is, of course, at www.covid19.sanantonio.gov/FHRC, the initials. And under that tab, we have all the offerings for emergency housing assistance, the financial assistance that Human Services is offering, as well as the small business programs. So under that tab, you'll see the Emergency Housing Assistance Program. It'll tell you what documents are needed to apply. The application itself is online. Once you have the documents, you can do it over your phone, or you can do it through your computer. if people don't have access to a computer, by calling that number, the 207-5910, we are able to help families do an in-person intake with a lot of safety precautions, of course. And it's at the actual recovery center. And so people know the recovery center is being run out of the central library. There's a space that our staff is occupying where we're running a lot of these programs and offering the opportunity for people who don't have access to a computer to fill out the application, and our staff go through the documents, go through the questions, and fill out the application with the client right then and there. But 207-5910, covid19.sanantonio.gov/FHRC is the website to go.
Now, who qualifies for this assistance?
So the main eligibility criteria is that families need to be first and foremost within the city limits of San Antonio, since this is a city program, and then the income has to be at or below 100% of the area median income. Area median income at 100% means the middle. So half of San Antonio families are eligible. For a family of four, it means that they must make less than $72,500. And so families that make less than that are eligible for this assistance program.
If someone lives in these other communities like Leon Valley or Balcones Heights, they're not eligible for these. Is there a compatible program with the county that could help those folks?
So I did mention that the county does have a program as well, helping us with the eviction work. And the county calls their program TRAM, T-R-A-M. If people call us and we find out that they're not within the city limits, we refer them to that program. We give them the website link and the phone number for that program. And so we are working every day with county staff because they do also have a program for housing assistance. And we cross refer clients every day.
Let's go to another caller, and this is Molly. And Molly, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but yes, people do qualify. I mean, people do get referred to TRAM, but TRAM also denies people as well for several reasons. And then TRAM bounces people back like a tennis match to NHSC, who in return denies them as well. My question, though,
so can you tell me what is your level of experience? People, how do you know that?
I'm an advocate. I'm a homeless advocate. DHS, Marjorie White, and Vettel know me very well. That's how I know. I always send them emails all the time on behalf of people that are about to become homeless and that are now homeless as well. And my question, though, is that with all these people that are becoming homeless that are being denied by NHSD and being denied by TRAM, and now they're homeless and living out, and we're getting more and more encampments along the highways and everything, do you now believe me in needing the overnight parking for especially single women, mothers, children, and elderly and disabled people? Can you now push the overnight safe parking program for people living in their cars and also on their feet? So do you now believe me in the urgency to ask the mayor to declare this a state of emergency and to blow away all the zoning commission that's been killing my request for about 2 years now?
Okay, Molly, thank you for calling in and giving us that update. So let's go back to Veronica Vettel-Soto with the Neighborhood and Housing Services Department. Let's talk about this situation. We do have people who don't qualify, who do end up being evicted, and we're seeing a growing number of those people. And where are they going?
So again, we have a team that is working at the courts and is helping people every day with help. If we cannot help them through our program, because some people face eviction for other issues than of rent, for example, we are partnering with other nonprofits that the Department of Human Services also works with to address homeless issues, if that's the case. We do offer some relocation assistance to try and stabilize families. Sometimes families need longer-term interventions. So we have had some cases where we refer clients to GI Forum, for example. If they're a veteran, GI Forum offers services, and they help stabilize family for the longer term beyond what our emergency house assistance program has. And we are very concerned about what this will cost in our community, and that's why we are putting these resources, that's why we're working with the providers to address homeless services on a regular basis as well.
And Melody Woolsey with the Department of Human Services at the City of San Antonio, what is the city doing in regards to what's expected to be a massive homeless problem? These are people who are transitionally homeless. They're homeless because because of the financial problems. If they had been given a little bit more help, they wouldn't be homeless. But how can we help these people?
So when people are evicted and they're working with NHSD, they're just not able to solve that. We have a couple of things that we can do. And so as Veto mentioned, we do work with our nonprofit partners to help people get longer term assistance with case management and supportive services to help them regain their housing and their financial stability. We also have a homeless hotline that people are able to call if they are homeless or potentially are heading in that direction. And we have people who are on the line that are trained in diversion from homelessness tactics. They help those folks work through diversion options, such as maybe staying with friends or a family member, what resources are available. For a while, our homeless shelter, local homeless shelters had closed intake during the the worst of the COVID problems, and they're slowly reopening intake, and so we're able to get people into shelter as a last resort if we can't help them with diverting them from homelessness. But we do have programs, and there was a good deal of additional federal funding provided for programs that prevent homelessness and also rapidly rehouse people who become homeless.
But Vero Soto, the people who are initially homeless, they have a vehicle, they turn to their vehicle first. They're not really interested in going to a homeless shelter. And do we have like parking lots set aside for where there's a police presence, where there's porta potties, where there's Wi-Fi, stuff like that for people who are vehicle homeless?
We don't have anything like that at the moment.
And is there like a policy like would prohibit something like that, or what's happening? Would that something like be beneficial?
So there's a lot of regulations around that, and it has been zoning issues that have prevented that idea from being implemented. You also have to have property owners who are willing to do that. And there are zoning considerations, as the caller mentioned as well.
But there's like a city parking lot right across the street from the police station. Something like that could be turned into something like this.
Again, there are some zoning regulations that you have to contend with first.
All right, we're going to take another break, and we'll continue the conversation talking about the City of San Antonio and the Financial and Housing Recovery Center, the help that they can provide to families to help them stay in their homes as we're looking at a mounting homelessness crisis, a housing crisis due to the economic fallout from COVID-19. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be right back.
A legacy of white supremacy in the U.S. has exacerbated the racial wealth gap for 400 years.
Racial discrimination prevented black and brown people from getting on the wealth-building train while white people were on the express train.
a conversation on racism and wealth disparity next time on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the Financial and Housing Recovery Center from the city of San Antonio. This is where you can turn to if you are dealing with a possible eviction because of COVID-19. You can't work, you can't get a paycheck, and now you are looking at paying the rent and you got to have some money. Maybe the city of San Antonio can help you out. If you got questions or comments, how are you coping? How is your family getting by? You can be anonymous, but we really do want to hear your personal stories, because this is information that the officials, they need to hear it so they can find out how they can get the people some help. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Michelle on the phones. And Michelle, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. As an artist who declares as a sole proprietor artist business, you guys were talking about the Lift Fund grants that are available for micro businesses earlier, so this comment is about that. It seems as an artist who is a sole proprietor, I would be eligible for the Lift Fund City of San Antonio and Bexar County grants. In fact, I have been turned down for these micro business grants due to no money going in and out of my bank account during this time and taking a loss on Schedule Cs, which artists tend to almost always do. Artist businesses do not operate like other businesses. In addition, there's a new individual artist grant from City of San Antonio, but if you're a sole proprietor artist business, which most artists are, again, you are ineligible to apply for that grant. many people are falling through the cracks of aid, and so I've received no aid from anything I've applied for. So my question is, who can I contact at the city who makes these guidelines to educate them on how artist businesses operate so we can actually get some aid?
All right, Michelle, thank you for that reality check on what's happening with artists here locally. Alex Lopez, and the director of the city's Economic Development Department.
And yes, thank you. And we did appreciate the fact that there is some specific nuances to artists in our arts small businesses and our individual artists, self-employed or sole proprietorships. So what we did actually is the funding and grant availability for artists is actually not going through Lift Fund. It's being administered through our Department of Arts and Culture, who has a lot more experience working with our artists, artist communities, and artist nonprofits. So they are actually the group that's going to be managing the arts granting to individuals, and that is definitely the group within our organization that should know about any potential challenges that any of our eligibility criteria may still be creating.
But the point that Michelle brought up about how she was denied help because she's not seeing any income right now, that seemed like, did that make any sense to you? Because that seems like that's why you would go and look for assistance, because you're not getting any income.
Right. And part of what we're using as the criteria is to be able to show the change in income. So we're asking for some documentation from previous times, where we can see what type of revenue, type of income an individual or a business was earning, and compared to now, where in many cases it is completely down to zero. But that is some of the documentation that we will need to see to show that change and that impact from COVID, basically. And that is associated with the federal regulations that accompany this funding.
Our phone lines are open. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you're looking at the problems in an eviction or not being able to meet the mortgage, what kind of questions do you have? Maybe you can get some assistance from the City of San Antonio. So, Vettel, with the City of San Antonio Neighborhood and Housing Services Department, what kind of folks are you seeing looking for help? What's these are like families with children, and they're really looking at being if this help wasn't there, they would be displaced, they would be homeless.
So we're looking at people who have lost their jobs, have income, they have had their hours reduced, and so they don't have enough money to pay their rent or to pay their mortgage. And so it is the jobs that are affecting these folks. So these are folks, some of them have applied for assistance in the past, and we are seeing some who have never had to apply for assistance because they have not been in this situation. We are seeing families, and we are seeing lower-income families for the most part. Just running, we have to do eligibility for the income levels. So just running numbers, over 60% of the clients that we're getting are making less than 50% of the area median income, which means these are families that are having a low economic income level anyways, and many of them are families. We're seeing a lot of occupations that you wouldn't be surprised about, waitresses, bar employees. We're seeing hospitality industry, so those kind of jobs. We were asking what industry people are were in, and so those are the kind of folks that are applying to our programs. Those are the kind of clients we are seeing.
But you mentioned that you have about $25 million remaining in the program. You think that by October, let's be generous, we'll run out of money, you think? What happens then? What happens to those types of families who need the help, and then finally you're saying we're tapped out? What's going to happen?
So we are, of course, waiting to see if the federal government provides additional money. The Financial Housing and Recovery Center and our Emergency Housing Assistance Program, the second phase is using that federal allocation from the Coronavirus Relief Fund. That's the federal program, CRF. And so we're waiting to see if there's additional relief that comes from the federal government that provides additional resources. At the same time, the city is in the middle of developing its budget for next fiscal year, and so we are looking to see if we continue some of these programs as well. So the genesis for the Emergency Housing Assistance Program was our existing risk mitigation program that the city had created some years ago and had funded out of the general fund. And for the next fiscal year, of course, we're talking about continuing funding for that program. Now it has morphed into the COVID-19 Emergency Housing Assistance Program. But the city is working at developing that budget for next year, and so these programs are being considered as part of that. The big thing to look out for is if there is additional federal assistance, since the bulk of the we're utilizing has come from the CARES Act and the funding that they have made available for these emergency situations.
Right now in Washington, D.C., there's the Republican leadership in the Senate has shown no appetite for putting more assistance out there to deal with this. So maybe that will change as the situation becomes more dire. Melody Woolsey, director of the City of City's Department of Human Services, and you're helping families navigate all these kind of possible benefits that are out there, from unemployment to CHIP and utility assistance. And it seemed like there was a recent study came out that showed that people who need this information the most are least likely to get it. They're not able to, they don't really access the information areas that they can find out about these programs. So what kind of outreach is happening?
Right. So, you know, the strategy that we think will help us find those families that simply are not connected, are not getting the information, is really door-to-door engagement. And so we are looking at working with community-based nonprofits that are really entrenched in neighborhoods, focusing on those neighborhoods who have very vulnerable populations. You know, high numbers of people living below the poverty line, primarily minority families, and just simply going door to door and spending time at any kind of neighborhood events or, you know, any type of location where there might be people that need more information. And so these teams will go door to door. They will talk to the families, let them know where they can find resources, help even start an intake form. They'll have tablets with them so that we can get them connected to the kind of help that they need.
Are you finding that some of the families that are looking for help that need your services, that 6 months ago, they were on solid ground, that they never would have seen themselves put in this situation, that we're seeing people from, there are neighborhoods that we would not think would be hollowed out with this type of, with the housing crisis, but now this is impacting parts of the city that we thought were secure and solid. Is that happening?
For the Department of Human Services, we primarily focus on serving those populations that are the most vulnerable. And so, you know, we're seeing a client base who is going from a bad situation to a worse situation. And that's primarily the participants that we're working with. I know Veto mentioned that with their housing assistance program, they're seeing families who were stable who have become unstable. But for us, we work with a lot of families who are part of the Head Start program or part of, other kinds of assistance programs, and this has exacerbated the condition that they're in, their financial stability as well as mental health, and there's a tremendous amount of stress this has brought on, and part of what we'll be doing as we're doing our assessment and helping people identify benefits is referring them to, other providers if they need different kinds of services.
And you already have a point of contact with them, typically, it sounds like. So that's something that you can start
right
with there. All right, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation talking about the Financial and Housing Recovery Center here in San Antonio and what's being done to help people from being tossed out of their homes and apartments because of the fallout from COVID-19. You can join our conversation. You can be anonymous. Tell us what you're looking at. And are you a landlord? Are you also seeing this as well? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. There is help available for people who find themselves on the ropes due to the economic fallout from COVID-19. The Financial and Housing Recovery Center is a place you can turn to the city of San Antonio, and they could find some money for you. And if you're a small business, there's also the Economic Development Department with the City of San Antonio, and they have grants for small businesses and nonprofits. Alex Lopez, you're the director of the Economic Development Department. Can you tell us about these grants?
Sure. So the intent of the grant is really to help a small business owner right now, both, through this situation and, again, develop that plan for how they may need to pivot, how they may need to adjust their business to continue to open up when it's safe to do so and in the levels when it's appropriate. The focus of the resources will be specifically for micro businesses. We're looking for those businesses with 20 employees or less that really may not have the ability to access the resources or have the ability to access the other programs that have been available so far. We are specifically targeting businesses because there is very much an equity approach to this. So we are focusing on businesses and geographies that are mostly in low-income areas. We're looking for businesses in areas that have a high concentration of residents of color. And because we've seen so much of the data and statistics about some of the other programs that have been available, and how these populations have not been able to access them. So our program does intentionally work to serve those business owners, which we know in San Antonio are the vast majority of our businesses.
Let's go to a caller. Jessica is on the phone. Jessica, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to point out that, as much as these assistance programs have been funded, and I appreciate city staff's work to get that funding, it's really important to evaluate honestly and acknowledge that these assistance programs are still missing the mark on addressing people's needs. People in crisis are facing compounded issues with layers upon layers of various challenges. So when this assistance has restrictions, like you can only use it for SAWS, you can only use it for rent, and it'll go directly to your landlord, people are left with having to fill in, you know, many gaps in their experiences. And so what's really needed is a long-term plan to fully support, fund quality service, quality case management, and ongoing support, so that this isn't a charity program, but actually a public serving assistance and support from our municipal government.
Jessica, I hear you, and thank you for calling in. Veronica Soto with the Neighborhood and Housing Services Department. I'm sure that the money is available only because it's for specific uses. There's a lot of background bureaucracy that, you know, is involved here, right?
Yes. So we are calling the program the Emergency Housing Assistance Program because it is going to be used to help us through this emergency situation. There are restrictions that come with the funding sources, and we have to follow them in order to help families in our community. And so it's not without limitations, if you will, because again, we're using a lot of federal funds for assistance. It is emergency assistance. There are limitations tied to that. And so as the administrators of this funding, we not only have to serve our community and find the best way to do that, but we also have to be good stewards of the funds for the federal agencies that are providing a lot of it.
And so you just don't have this giant pot of money, and then you came up with all of this restrictions or red tape and bureaucracy just because you thought that would be interesting. The idea is that you applied for the grant money from the federal government, from different departments. They tell you you can have it only under these certain conditions, and they can only go to these people, type of people, under these conditions, and you have to abide by that. And what happens if you don't?
So what happens if we don't is we get audited or monitored, and they find a case or several cases where we didn't follow those rules, and they ask us as a city to give the money back, and to give the money back out of non-federal resources, which means it has to be paid back out of money out of the general fund that is used for other services that the city provides. And so it is our duty to make sure that we make it as successful and easy as possible, but we also need the documentation to prove to the funding sources that we did it correctly and that we have the documents to back up the correct use of the funds.
Let's go to Bob on the phones. And Bob, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I am very blessed. My family and I, we are not affected by COVID, but the ones that are, I'd like to know more about the woman that was trying to work with parking lots for 2 years now and hasn't had anything happen. And this is an emergency. They need somewhere to go in a safe place. What can we do? That's my question. What can we do?
Bob, thank you for calling in. These parking lots, this is something that other cities, I know in California, they've put them out there in other parts of the country. I don't know about in Texas, but Veronica, you said that the city is not right now able to do this. And do you see that there is a need and that this will have to be addressed?
Well, the need for creativity when it comes to addressing the crisis that is being created is there. I know Mel, who works with homeless services, and I have been talking about this idea. And so there are, like with anything, things we have to make sure are not barriers, but we're taking many different ideas. Mel and I have discussed this and have found that there are zoning considerations that we have to be worried about. We also want to make sure we do the best long-term interventions as well. Sometimes the short-term interventions not the best ones for the long term. And so all of that has to be balanced when we consider ideas like this one. Not that it's a bad idea, but is this the best use of the resources, and what are the other interventions that could really help stabilize families for the longer term?
Melody Woolsey, many people are need help, but they have immigration status that there's some questions about. Does that become a conflict?
You know, as Veta mentioned, there are federal restrictions on federal funds, and sometimes subfederal funds allow you to serve immigrants, undocumented immigrants. Some don't. And so that's why, you know, we are working together, these three departments and others, very closely, so that we can braid or blend our funding and ensure that we can provide services to everyone in the community. And so we spend a lot of time really focusing on which source of funding should be used for which client or participant or which program, so that we can maximize the dollars that we have to serve everyone.
The current administration has gotten pretty harsh when it comes to if you have if you're in the country legally but you're not a citizen and you have immigration status, you're a resident, and if you take some sort of program funding, then they could revoke your immigration status. Accepting some of these grants and financial help, would that fall under that category, Melody? Do you know?
It depends on the grant. Some do and some don't, and that's part of, you know, really what's so important about training for the benefits navigators that we're standing up, is so that they can provide guidance in that area. We also have an Office of Immigration at the city, and an immigration liaison who helps us identify, when that might happen, and provides information to the community. So it is, the public charge issue is something that a lot of people are worried about, and unfortunately, it keeps people from coming in for assistance that may not impact their status.
Veronica Vettel-Soto, what do you think is the biggest barrier for people asking for help? They need the help, they want the help, but they're not really ready to come in for it. I mean, do you see that happening?
Well, one of the barriers has been the computer literacy and digital access. And we were aware of that, but because of the social distancing protocols, it wasn't ideal to set up a large intake where, you know, we wouldn't want crowds in a large line. So we had to go to this virtual mode. So we knew it was going to be a barrier. So one of the things we have done is done a lot of great outreach with a lot of grassroots organizations, helping them to not just get the word, but to get applicants and encourage applicants to apply. So a lot of volunteers, and I'm very grateful for all those partnerships where they actually would help someone fill out an application, would do it with them, would do it over the phone with them. Some local churches did that as well. And so that's one of the things that we knew we would have to overcome with the pandemic and all the stay-at-home orders that were in place when we launched it. And so sometimes we tell people we need an additional document and asking them to upload it. There are some families who may not have that ability to give us additional information. So that has been a very unfortunate barrier that we have seen with our programs, given how we have to deliver in these times without a lot of face-to-face interaction and many offices having closed.
Veronica Soto is the director of the City of San Antonio Neighborhood and Housing Services Department. Also with us, Melody Woolsey, director of the City's Department of Human Services. Alejandra Alex Lopez, the director of the City's Economic Development Department. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Capps is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.